Welcome to Try Not to Blink. Today's show is going to highlight a new medication that has come to market for pain. Then we'll discuss some new recommendations for cataract surgery based on a recently published review. We will give a must-do CellPod, scleral lens pearl of the day. And finally, we'll wrap up with Sheila giving some pointers that she learned from her recent public speaking training course.
I like the line of, I'm sitting here getting one too, because every minute of every day that anybody lives, the lens is changing just as a natural part of collecting birthdays. So that's my kind of one of the things that I like to say.
We'd like to thank the amazing people at Valley Contacts who have made this podcast possible. Makers of stellar gas permeable lenses and the incredible custom stable scleral lens. I'm your host, Roya Habibi, and joining me is Sheila Morrison. Let's do this. Okay, we have a lot of fun things to talk about today, and let's just start with the shiny new things, Sheila. So first thing is a new FDA approval that we have in the U.S. This is a new medication approved for the treatment of post-op pain and inflammation. It does not have a fancy name yet, which is too bad because you know we love to make fun of the names, but it's clobetasol propionate suspension drum.
I don't know that name.
That's still
a complicated name.
It's a generic so far. Interestingly, it was created by a pharmaceutical company called Formosa. It's actually in the Asian market. But Inovia purchased U.S. rights for it. So kind of interesting. They're kind of working together for that.
So what kind of like pain from what? After surgery?
Yeah. So basically this medication, clobetasol, it is a steroid actually.
Oh, okay.
It's the first new steroid to enter the U.S. market in over 15 years. And what is unique about it, twice daily without titration versus up to four times a day for other treatment options.
Okay.
And what they found is 9 out of 10 patients achieved complete absence of post-surgical pain, and 6 out of 10 achieved total absence of inflammation within 15 days post-op.
Why do they really need more steroids? Like, what about the ones we have now isn't good enough? And like, you know what I mean?
That's a great question. I don't know.
I mean, it'd be interesting to hear the results of a study that was similar about, you know, what 9 out of 10, 7 out of 10, 4 out of 10 of the other steroids, if they have the same results.
That's a great question. And you know what? I'm going to like try and do this as we're talking right now, but I'm always really curious about what inactive ingredients they put. Like, I want to know what the preservative is, because almost all of them have BAKA. So the only useful thing that I would personally see is if they had one, without BAKA, or, you know, has something new. And actually, truly, I do find some value in the different types of steroids. One example, for instance, is I do really enjoy using dexamethasone, Durezol. It has a really soft, it has a soft steroid, or sorry, soft preservative in it. So some patients, even though it's really strong, that's not necessarily the goal of what I use it for most of the time, but it tends to be really soft on the eye too. So that would be one argument I'd have for having another option. So
are you using Durezol on patients that are non-uveitis patients?
Rarely, but sometimes.
Sometimes. You know, I had a remote consult from my wonderful, wonderful colleagues at Mission Eye Care who bail me out when I'm traveling. So I'm actually out of town. Of course, anytime you leave the clinic for like 5 seconds, it's like
disaster.
All disaster breaks loose.
Yes.
It's like the kid I had, the minute I'm out, there's immediately one of our infant aphakia patients with a contact lens stuck in their eye.
Of course.
Absolute
and no
disaster.
No one is capable of.
Right. And so, luckily at our office, we do have more than just me, like, you know, between Andrea and Aaliyah and anyways. But it's still, it's not their problem. It's my patient.
And the parents scared because they definitely don't trust them, even though they're very amazing.
This one's 2 years old now. So I don't know if you have fit a ton of infant aphakia, but right, like they're magic and joy and love when they're babies and they don't really do much. They just kind of chill like a little lump. But when they're two, they have feelings and opinions and they
like scared.
Flip the F out. So they're just losing it about something like this. So anyways, I needless to say, it was a long, long appointment for Dr. Capilani, and bless her heart, she bailed me out hard. Another patient that they saw in the clinic this week, yesterday, I think, was one that I had on Tobradex. And so he seemed to be having, to your point, the only thing they can think about, he was doing better on it for a little while and starting to get worse again. And it's more at this point an inflammatory thing for him. You know, he's pretty much done with antibiotic, but we were talking a little bit about the preservative in it and just switching him off of, you know, so you're right. I mean, it, you know, there definitely is room, and, you know, companies want a piece of the pie. So maybe, who did you say bought it?
Inovia.
Okay. And they don't have a steroid.
I don't think they do. I mean, they're such a new medication or new company.
Yeah.
Mycombi, which is their dilating drop, their combination dilating drop in their Inovia platform, the spray dropper that's about to come to market. And I think that's their first product that they're launching to market. So I think they are probably just trying to diversify.
Going for it. And I don't blame...
I just also read that the steroids... So this says, the market of topical ophthalmic steroids is significant, valued at $1.3 billion.
So that's a pie piece. That's a pie you want a piece
huge,
of.
Huge, huge, yeah.
Totally, for sure.
Always, though, a new medication is going to come at high cost. So it's not going to be prescribed nearly the same as all of our... prednisolone, right? Or our bread and butter generics, but either way.
Well, there's it kind of like reminds me of contact lenses that have kind of come. We were just talking about some of the materials that are used in some of the Biofinity lenses that we use, for example, or, you know, Ability, as you know, is a design that it's a new Ortho-K design by Vistacon that design was purchased from another company that had it for a long, long time.
Of course.
So like, why wouldn't you grab on to somebody that has values that are aligned with your company and pick up where they left off or kind of reinvent it a little bit rather than starting completely from scratch? It's like a cold start versus buying a practice, I guess, that already is somewhat established.
Oh, 100%. One thing I do want to touch on real quick, because it just like was a light bulb moment, a reminder from something I went to years ago. I'm touching on this partially because you're doing this, you're making this round right now. You alluded to the fact that you're out of the office right now, doing all these amazing, you know, trainings, and you're at Vision Expo, which we'll talk about in a second. But I was at a dinner with one of the cornea specialists in the Seattle, North Seattle area. I'm like so embarrassed because I'm going blank on her name right now, but she's well known in the area. She's been established in the area. And she said something to me about Tobradex that changed my entire way of prescribing.
What
literally
did she say?
Then. She's just like, I don't know how to say this without sounding wrong, but the way that she comes off is just like boldly confident, right? Like she just is like a no mess around kind of doc. And she has established herself in the area, like I mentioned, but she's like, I never prescribe combo drops. I never
it's a cover your butt
it.
Drop. It really
As
is.
As a cornea specialist, I literally never do it. She's like, if I want to prescribe a combination, I will prescribe two medications.
Tell us, why is that?
Because first of all, a combination, she said, if you're prescribing a combo drop, you're not confident in your diagnosis.
Totally.
And it was like a full key turn in. And I was like a young doctor, like trying to be all like, you know, trying to get to know her and like, think yeah. I'm a smart
How is that
doctor.
Different than if you're prescribing a steroid and an antibiotic,
well,
how's that any different?
Sometimes you do need both, right? Let's say you do have a lot of inflammation, but you do have an infection, like you have a bacterial infection. So you're hitting the infection hard with the antibiotic, but you need a little anti-inflammatory. So
exactly.
And the thing is too, she said that if you need both, you probably don't need both at the same frequency. Mm-hmm. Maybe you need your steroid a lot. Maybe you only need your antibiotic a little or vice versa. Mm-hmm, and so she was like, if you like prescribing both, it's just risky. And also tobramycin, unfortunately, why am I going blank on my words today?
Antibiotic resistance?
No, not antibiotic resistance. It is a tachyphylaxis or tachy whatever.
Oh,
basically
okay,
an irritation.
Okay.
Like the medication itself is irritating.
Absolutely. So it's like basically like an, it's a, you create an allergy almost.
Exactly. Yeah, yes. Exactly. So if you want both,
I got you, sister.
Fine. That was her argument. And honestly, like I've kind of gone by that nowadays. Like most of the time a steroid fixes the problem. You just have to be careful, right? But I liked that. I liked that thought. Just if you can avoid it, have them back or don't if you're not sure. But why do both? Or prescribe them like they should be prescribed.
I love it.
It's always a little...
How did you call her again, too? Confident and, like, what was that?
Boldly confident. To be honest, confident. She's, like, in almost a way, like, a little snooty, but, like, the kind of way you were, like, I want to sit at her table. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, how does she, how is she like that?
It's like a, just a little over quiet confidence. Like, it's just a bit more than
not
that.
Quiet.
Like, a little more extra confident.
She's also, like, she is...
Well-deserving
confident. Deservedly confident, right?
Okay,
like,
that's
she's
fair.
In her... But I won't... Obviously, no, I didn't say her
girl
name.
Girl fan club.
Yeah, she's awesome. She's amazing. Totally. She's an amazing cornea specialist. She's a good person to have in our area. I think she's still practicing. But
what
regardless.
Do you have in Costa Rica for cornea specialists? I don't really remember if we've talked about this before. What are your, do transplants and things like that, or do people travel out of the country?
A little bit of both.
Okay.
But what I do know and what I'm very excited about is we just started a... what's called an alliance. We're sort of building the alliance, if you will, but I've been meeting them and talking with the ownership of this company. But there's this group that is like a multidisciplinary clinic. They're all ophthalmologists. But in San Jose, the owner is named Dr. Orlich. So Claudio Orlich, he's a cornea specialist. He was trained in Mexico, I believe. Then he did, he actually is a member of like the American Academy of Ophthalmology, the Association of American Surgery of Cataract, ASCRS, whatever. Anyways, excellent surgeon. He does cornea, cataract, LASIK, all that fun stuff. And actually, I've sent a couple patients now, or we have at the clinic sent a couple patients now, and they have like beautiful facility, beautiful staff. So
nice.
It's really exciting. They're in San Jose, so it's about a 5-hour drive from us, though.
Okay, but it's at least it's in the country. How does healthcare work there then? Do they have coverage from the government to have the procedures done, or is it private?
So there is universal healthcare available in Costa Rica, but probably a lot like Canada, if I would assume, most people end up not using end up going private for things that are a little more complicated.
You know what? Canada, I would say, still would be largely, I think anything that's really complicated is 100% taken in quickly, especially in patients that it's emergent. Mm-hmm. So sometimes for like a transplant, let's compare wait list time then, Maria. So how long would somebody wait for a transplant in Costa Rica? Do you know?
Actually, I have a patient right now. We have a patient we referred. She has Fuchs.
Yep.
And she said that she's waiting, like she was told 1 or 2 months for the transplant. She's on the donor list, basically.
So that's pretty fast. So we sometimes, depending
private,
on the urgency, was it, that's private?
Private.
Okay. So
I have no
do you think
idea
it would
be
like
would be.
Years? So public, Hopefully. It could be anywhere depending on like, I guess, well, it depends on what tissues that are available in the moment
exactly.
too. Because then it could change a little bit, but you know, I guess urgency, what is urgent? You know, people who can see out of one eye still, even though the other eye is completely not usable, to me, that's urgent.
Yeah.
But in the eyes of the system, it's not as urgent, I suppose.
That's true. Yeah,
wait lists are probably like 1 to 2 years, honestly. And very few people, I don't even know, you definitely cannot private pay in Alberta outside if you're not in like with Alberta Healthcare for a cornea transplant, just because there's so many Albertans waiting for them. So
wow.
That's an interesting thing. I actually had a patient that traveled to us from, where was he from? I can't quite remember now off the top of my head, but you know, it was somewhere like, I don't know. I want to say it wasn't Costa Rica, but it was something, you know, somewhere in the area. And for whatever reason, he just decided to come to Calgary to see us for his eye print lenses. And he actually decided he wanted to get a transplant, but there was nobody in his country that would be able to do it. And so he wanted to referred him and was found out that hadn't changed, that you can't actually pay privately for it. A lot of other services though with healthcare, you can. So like you could go pay for an MRI tomorrow, whereas with a system, you're waiting, you know, months for an MRI for like a knee that needs surgery or something like that. So yeah, I would say we probably then, by the sounds of it, use private pay less compared to Costa Rica. But I mean, nobody's as much as probably the US, I suppose.
Totally. Well, U.S. is super interesting, right? Their whole healthcare system. What is right and what's wrong? It's hard to argue one way or the other, yeah, right?
That's outside also, of our optometry scope.
No, we're not going to go into that one.
We're not going into those politics.
What I do want to go into, kind of on the same note, is a new study that came out regarding cataract surgery, actually.
Okay.
So let me just say first, the study itself basically came out that there's an association between vision impairment and cognitive decline. So as people's vision is getting worse, there's cognitive decline. That's well established. That association's been well established. But they're finding that cataract surgery, so there is a link that with cataract surgery, there is less cognitive decline and potentially dementia in getting cataract surgery. So
can you say that again?
Basically, here, let me read through the specs, but essentially when you get cataract surgery, your risk for cognitive decline and dementia is lower.
Okay.
Okay. So what they did is it was a big review study. There's 24 articles comprising a total of almost 600,000 participants. And they essentially found that with cataract surgery, it was associated with a 25% reduced risk of long-term cognitive decline compared to those that were uncorrected cataracts.
Well, that makes sense related to like what they've already established in that, you know, vision impairment and cognitive decline is an established relationship.
Right.
So, I mean, it would definitely make sense. It's cool they're actually studying it.
Yeah.
I love that.
I mean, at the end of it, they basically said that we need more studies to actually understand why. So they can, you know the real benefit or who should mm-hmm. and who shouldn't. But at least for me, the way I take that, current kind of personally right now, my dad actually is getting cataract surgery in like 2 weeks.
What? I know. No way.
I know. Finally, it's been like, you know, we've been talking about it a few years now.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. Did you hand pick a surgeon?
I helped him. I gave him like a couple options to pick from near him. Mm-hmm. And he went and met him, was really impressed with the facility. The guy has really good reviews online. Does a ton of surgeries. And in my opinion, I kind of like that, someone who has a lot of experience, especially for an eye that's mostly uncomplicated, right? Normal eye. He's hyperopic. He's worn multifocal contact lenses for years and years. Okay. So it's like a +2 hyperope prior to cataracts. And now he's like 20, 30, glare at night, it's getting worse. Glare testing reduces vision to 20, 50, especially in the worst eye. The one thing that like kind of got me hung up and sort of annoyed, but obviously it's I don't care that much, is the surgeon said, okay, you're right-handed, and so I'm going to do your left eye first.
Why?
His right eye vision is worse.
So, but why would he do, why though?
Isn't that the weirdest thing you've ever heard?
But what if he was like, what if his hand dominance was the other way?
I know. I was like, his left eye is actually dominant.
But what does it matter? Well,
I know. Yeah. I've never heard this in my whole life. I was like, why don't
he probably has a reason. Like, there's got to be some reason that he wants to do it that way.
I mean, I looked at his...
I'm drawing a blank, though.
I have no idea. I've never heard this. But that's how he explained it to my dad. My dad's vision is 20/40-ish.
Okay.
It corrects to like 20/30 plus in the right eye.
Left eye. Give him a bat test, it would be just totally terrible.
It's 20/60-ish. Yes. Left eye is like 20/25 plus, right? Like it's pretty good still. So why would he do his left eye first?
I don't know.
It's so peculiar. I've never heard of such a thing.
Wait, but right eye dominant.
Left eye dominant.
Left eye, yeah, I don't know. I'm not too
literally
sure.
Literally, you should. Everything different.
You should ask him just out of interest. Invite the surgeon to be on the podcast.
Right?
Actually, though.
He's kind of a younger guy. Maybe you would say yes.
Ask him. Let's try. You don't know until you try.
You're right.
I already told you. I think I mentioned, because you really just don't know until you ask. I think I might have mentioned this in a previous, I don't even know if you and I were just talking about it or if we actually talked about it on the show. But, you know, I'm into trail running lately. And.
Yes.
So, you know, you don't know until you ask. I have a small girl crush on the best trail runner in the world. Well, one of the best. Her name is Sally McRae. And she just did like 3 200-mile races in the same season and won a bunch of them and is just like totally amazing. She's in the U.S. And so, yeah, I just contacted her to see if she was interested in being our keynote for the Alberta meeting in Banff in the fall. Oh. And her assistant initially declined, but when they found out it was in Banff, they said, you know what, she can make that. I think it's the location gets people sometimes. So she's coming out as our keynote. I was thrilled. So I'm like, well, I'll ask for more things. How about, would you do a 5K run with any participants that wanted to run with you in Banff in the fall?
So you're extremely excited.
Also said yes. Also said
amazing,
yes.
Amazing.
I know. I'm so excited. So yeah, no, that'll be fun. But you don't know until you ask, right? So let's get this guy on the podcast.
There you will. If it's not him, anyone's favorite cataract surgeon, let's have that, because that would be really fun. If anyone wants to nominate one of their favorite cataract surgeons,
I've got a few ideas.
On the show, let's do that.
So you know
what I do want to say, maybe we'll save this to the next episode, but I do want to say, just to like leave a little thought in your mind, is like, how do you talk to people nowadays when they have cataracts? Like, for instance, even if they're not complaining, you're seeing maybe a 2+ nuclear sclerosis, like maybe a 20/25, you know, softish vision, but they're like, my vision's fine. Like, what do you say?
One of my favorite lines is we have to be clear about, like, because if I can't get your vision to be better than it is, I have to explain the reason. And some people are pretty chill about it, don't really mind having that conversation. But for some, it's kind of like telling them for the first time that they need reading glasses. Like, it's kind of that sort of feeling of aging or whatever it is that can be kind of difficult. I like the line of, well, I'm sitting here getting one too, because every minute of every day that anybody lives, the lens is changing just as a natural part of collecting birthdays. So that's my kind of one of the things
I'm
that I like to say.
I'm sitting here getting one.
Yeah,
I love
I'm getting
that.
One too. We're in it together.
Love that. Actually, I say cataracts are just wrinkles of the eye.
Oh,
our
cute.
Eyes get this, and it's actually mostly from the sun. Other things cause it too, but... everyone's getting it slowly but surely. And I do pull up the birthday thing, but people are like, oh, why? I'm like, the sun.
You've lived a good life is what I say.
Yeah,
I say you've lived a good life in the sun.
Yep.
You've been out doing things, you know?
Yep.
You enjoyed. I love that.
But then also I do try and say it early on, like at 1+ or trace, I'll just bring it up. For me, I'm in Costa Rica, so it's pretty easy conversation. Even in Seattle, I used to say it always. But I think it's important before you're like, you need surgery, to start planting that seed.
Totally. Yeah.
But I've really changed in the past few years talking about cataract surgery, or even like not pushing it by any means, but just recommending it a little sooner than I would have in the past. Right. Because I think when people are healthy, active, you know, out and about, everyone gets, I mean, not everyone, obviously there are a couple of the stories that we hate to hear about, but like when people get cataract surgery, their life has changed in such an amazing way. And so I don't think we should be afraid to be like, I think you should at least go meet with a surgeon and make sure you like the surgeon that is my, like one of my favorite referrals or the one that's close to your town. But I think you should meet with him, and he may tell you need to wait a year or two, but I think it would be appropriate to at least consider it right now. You're healthy. You're getting out and about right now.
Couldn't agree more. What I don't often say that, but you never know what could get thrown at somebody in life, you know, because, you know, now I'm happy and healthy or not. Well, I'm healthy enough to have this procedure. You wait a little longer and you just never know what's going to get thrown, you know? You were saying that your dad's a +2 hyperope?
Exactly. Well, like more or less, yes.
Okay. So that reminded me of something that I was talking about with, so I was at a speaker training with a professional public speaking coach. It was an event that the last couple of days I've been in San Francisco area, in the Bay Area for Cooper Vision, doing some, it was kind of fun actually, some focus work on just improving public speaking.
Awesome.
And one of the things that's not related to public speaking at all, but came up because there was somebody who presented like basically like an elevator speech about experience they had had in optometry. It was actually so hilarious and so true. It was about being on a mission trip and doing this like heroic act of, you know, giving somebody back their minus like 6 myope. 20-something-year-old has never had glasses before. They like bring in like the video people to film this epic event at this charity thing they're doing, and like big heroes for the moment when they put these glasses on this patient, this person that's in this third world country or whatever, all go silent, put the glasses on, expecting, of course, like what should happen, which is like pure joy and just the biggest experience of a lifetime or something like that, obviously. Oh, yeah, these are good. Takes them off, put them in their pocket, walks away. Walks away. And then the next one was correcting a, so these people, the whole point was they were already adapted. So they've already, I know it's like a total disaster when somebody with high minus doesn't, has never had correction for years or whatever it is. But think about this scenario. And the whole point was to talk about multifocals and like the benefit of correcting patients with a multifocal prescription. Your plus two hyperope goes their whole life and is used to a certain level of vision, being able to see with no glasses, no contacts. All of a sudden at that ripe old age, they turn into this phase where not only is their near vision blurry, but their distance is also blurry too. And they get to the point where they just really can't see anything. And so putting glasses on those people was actually a way bigger, like joyful, rewarding moment, because that's, they like could actually appreciate it. They had it and then they lost it.
Yes.
Versus never knew what they were missing and kind of were adapted to the blur, didn't really care.
They liked the blur. No, it's true. I feel like.
Yeah, it's because it's overstimulating. Actually, that was the whole point, was like another part of it is putting that correction on for the first time. And actually, I see this in the specialty lens clinic. Some people who, you know, haven't had vision for years and years, you put, give them their perfect 20/20 and they're actually kind of like visually confused.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. I want to take a quick tangent as a cell pod, and I want to say it right away. Never over minus.
Boom.
Never over minus.
For anybody, for any reason, right?
I mean, we never went over minus, but in a scleral lens, especially someone who's had really bad vision for a while, especially someone who's crossed into presbyopia, never over minus. Because when you do...
Over minus a quarter for driving glasses?
Oh my God. Well, in driving glasses is a whole other story. I'm talking about you go, you put their lenses on expecting the wow moment, and they're uncomfortable and then complaining that they can't see the anything anymore, but they're really just talking about all their near strain. Like, I would rather go plus a quarter or plus a half undercorrected for most of those patients than even nailing it perfectly is usually a 20 unhappy, even though you took them from, you know, 2080, 2200. So never over minus. If there's any direction,
what if that
you can
should
go.
Be part of training for adaptation to specialty lenses, that we should actually have, when we're doing training for students, have them actually purposely do that on the first lens? I actually think I might just start, because you're totally right. Yes. This happens all the time.
Yes. I find
it's amazing that, cell pod.
I feel like this is not a research thing, but I find, mostly because I don't let a lens settle very long, I never have, just because I've historically been in really busy clinics, and when the eye is still tearing a little with a lens in, I find that that must create like a little plus tear meniscus, and so
totally.
I mean, maybe this is backwards, but I find that it's pretty easy to give them a quarter extra plus or a quarter extra minus, usually plus though. So just don't do it. If they're not getting better, don't give that extra minus. Err to the side of positive. You'll thank yourself.
You'll thank yourself. Your patients will thank you.
Right. Everyone will. And then if it means that you create, like if you add minus a quarter, which none of us usually even do, but that's another pearl, but we'll leave that for another cell pod. But leaving them under minus by a quarter, especially if they're presbyopic, is going to be something that they will love you for. They'll act like they want it, but they won't really want it.
They don't want it. They don't know what they want.
They don't know.
Don't you think the labs just hate us when we send in like a redo with no other change besides like a minus a quarter or something like that?
They must be annoying. I'm sorry, Valley.
It is probably very annoying.
I'm sorry.
But they're so kind. Right. They're so wonderful. So thank you, Valley. Thank you, everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I know. It's those ornery patients. To be honest, like I have a hard time even showing patients that, because you know that it's just going to like bite you in the end, and they're going to go back into their plus a quarter more power anyway. But
yeah,
untangent, coming back from the tangent, let's go back to your speaker training, because it sounds amazing.
Oh, sure. Totally. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That actually, we could talk a little bit about that.
I want to hear about it.
Because we were talking about before the show. Let's do it. So yeah. So it was really cool. Actually, CooperVision facilitated and put us through like some actual public speaking training, which has been something that, you know, you think about athletics and you think about basically any skill on the planet. A skill is really, some people are naturally gifted, of course. Roya, like you probably never did a minute of speaker training in your life. You got that smooth silk voice on the podcast.
But in silk reality, voice isn't public speaking.
Isn't skill necessary. Yeah. So that's the whole thing, is even no matter how naturally gifted that somebody is, You know, training to do something better is always, sports are like that, you know, basically anything, any high level person functioning at a high level of whatever they're doing. It's really cool. So we took one of the take homes that I actually had that I'd love to share with everybody is, I've never thought about this until this last 2 days of, you know, how many times do you stand up to do a presentation or something like that, or you're going to give a lecture somewhere and they're like, hey, introduce yourself. You can do your own bio, right? You know, and that's fine. Like, so then you go up there, you're like, hey, I'm Sheila Morrison and I practice at Mission Eye Care. I went to Pacific University, got my optometry degree, and then I did my residency in cornea and blah, blah, blah. Rattle off a bunch of stuff and sort of trail off or whatever. It's fine. Nothing wrong with that. But what they challenged us to do was create like your elevator speech, basically. So having something set in mind that's very clear and to the point for a couple of different situations. One guy did like on an airplane. Hey, buddy, what do you do? Okay, I have this little pitch that I'll say just to be short and sweet, get him off my back, whatever. I have something I know that I can say that's easy because it can be awkward for people and you sound kind of stupid. And then you're like, okay, elevator pitch, your bio. That's the one that I really actually, you know what? Let's do speaker training, right?
Oh my God. Train me. Tell me.
Let's do this. Okay. So this is completely off the cuff. I am going to assign you a project right now, right here.
I'm in.
Okay, so you need to introduce yourself.
Okay.
And I want you to just choose whatever you want. It could be any environment. So this could be doing a lecture. It could be on an airplane or any other situation that you want where you have to actually give some background about yourself. And let's do it somewhat professionally. And I want you to give me your elevator picture of who you are and what you're about to, what are you going to do?
Okay.
So set the stage, then give me the pitch.
Okay, so my name is Roya Habibi.
Where are we? What is the audience? Oh, what are we doing here today?
So, like, I have to say,
who are you
where
talking
are we
to?
Oh, I'm defining.
Yeah, who
that?
Are you talking to? Yeah,
I have so much homework. Okay, I'm talking to. I don't know. You tell me, and then I'll. I have.
Okay, so how about this one? Okay. Yeah, so you're talking to you are in Canada lecturing to. Okay. Doctors at the Alberta Association meeting.
Okay, so I'm talking to fellow optometrists.
So, somebody gave your name and said, hey, why don't you just do your own bio before the presentation so we don't have to read your bio. It sounds kind of boring when we do it.
Deal.
Introduce yourself to everybody.
Okay, welcome everyone. My name is Roya Habibi. I am a fellow optometrist trained in the U.S., but I have now immigrated to Costa Rica, where I'm the owner of Ojos del Mar, a clinic with a training facility and a major outreach program where we have integrated ourselves in the community here. Oh, I don't know.
I thought it was really strong. You shouldn't have stopped. Would you stop like that if we were really on the stage, Roya? You'd keep going.
And I would say, looking forward to meeting all of you and let's get started.
Oh, I love this. You said it. So, Kate, here's just really good job. So here's a very, very good job. And I have to credit Gigi Rosenberg. So she was fantastic with some of the teachings. But anyways, so, okay, a couple pointers. If you want critique.
I want it.
Would you like it?
Give
okay.
It.
I think that you need to add something in your elevator pitch of credibility. So okay. Something along the lines of like, you know, you don't have to list all the things that you did for school, but say if you're the person that looks a little bit younger or something like that, like you definitely do, especially your Costa Rican self, tan and like, you know, whatever. You want to say something along the lines of, since I completed my fellowship, you know, a decade ago or something like that, whatever,
okay.
Whatever it is.
I like that.
I'm trying to think of what other like actually constructive. I think that was really, really great. You definitely don't want to start with, I thought actually, honestly, your start was very, very good. And probably the biggest problem was that you stopped.
Okay.
So you don't want to, of course, you would never do that live, though. I know you'd just carry on and it'd be just amazing at the end.
Well, I knew it was a...
This is safe space. You can say whatever you want.
Right.
And then we'll
safe
get the,
space.
Yeah.
It's just us.
Yeah, exactly.
You're right.
Just us. This is just try not to blink. We're chill. We're chill here. We don't judge. But it's hard, isn't it? Like, it's hard to actually think about. And if you think about what you're actually saying, what message do you want to get across to these people? Do you want to communicate your expertise? What are the main things, you know? What are your characteristics without saying, like, coming across as being too full of yourself?
Totally.
Or whatever. Like, there's some people are so funny too. Like, one thing that happened to me was they're like, you should try new things in this, again, safe, going up in front of a bunch of people who are critiquing you is not, doesn't feel safe. It's actually really nerve wracking. But I'm not really that funny. Like, I don't really do jokes in my lectures. I honestly don't. Like, I'm pleasant. I think I'm like can be likable, but I'm definitely not funny. So I did try a few jokes. And they were like a huge flop.
It didn't hit.
The critiques were all around. No, it didn't hit. Like, they were, yeah. So they
people were
the
like, critiques try were again. Good job.
They're just like, you did, they're like, we didn't get the one for one. Like, why did that even, like, here, I'll tell you now. You tell me if you think it's good or bad. Okay. Some of my, or I would say majority of my colleagues would say that I, how did I say it? See, I can't even repeat it. Some of my colleagues would say that I have a little itty teeny bitty passion for specialty contact lenses. Do you get it?
I mean, I definitely get it, but your colleagues don't get it. Like, they don't, they're not your colleagues.
Totally. It was so bad. I know. So anyways, my lesson was, I probably just won't try that one again. Like, I won't try to make a joke or whatever, but yeah.
So wait, what's yours now? Tell us your like contender.
Well, so, okay, I'll try.
Same thing.
Okay. So let me just see.
You're down in, you know.
Well, I'm going to Expo tomorrow. Like, I'll be there tomorrow. So if anyone's out there,
and I need they'll hear probably. Intro.
Exactly. So I'll try. Okay. So my name is Sheila Morrison. I'm a private practice optometrist at Mission Eye Care Center for Dry Eye Corneal Disease in Calgary. So I do see patients 4 days a week, and here's my change for you. So I switched from the joke. So what the group told me to do is change it to this. My colleagues often say that I'm obsessively passionate about specialty contact lenses and myopia control. What do you think?
Is that better? I like that.
Yeah, better. Okay. Since completing my cornea and contact lens residency a decade ago, I had the opportunity to take my dream job at the University of Houston as chief of the cornea contact lens clinic. Until about 5 years ago, I relocated back to my homeland, Canada, where I am still participating in educational things as an adjunct faculty for Oklahoma. We do have a residency at our office, and we're really just hopping with all fun things, medical contact lens and myopia control. Let's dive in now. Today, I'm going to take some of the things that I have picked up over the years and in my practice to share with you so you can pull some pearls for your practice.
I really like that.
That's my elevator pitch.
The one pearl I'd say or a critique I'd say is instead of, you said something passionate. What was the word?
I think like obsessively passionate or something like that.
I think instead of obsessively, what about like meticulously? Because I think it's more about being detail oriented for you. Then like, it's kind of an obsession, but I think more so it's that like you want every single detail to be perfect and you have the capability.
I'm going
to
try it tomorrow at Expo. Yeah. This is great. Yeah. So you just evolve. So yeah, it takes like training and it's really humbling to really, we're all learning 100% of the time. And if you don't really see that, then you're not going to get there.
Yep.
You know?
Well, and also having something that's an intro that keeps people hooked the whole time. And also is showing off what is actually valuable. I just think is super important, whether it is introducing yourself or it's a cover letter or, you know, something like that. It's important to be able. And honestly, if you try and be a speaker at any of the different events, or if you are, you know, honestly, if you're writing an article, you need to have an up-to-date or bio. So having those tips and having those pearls are important to see in editing maybe your bio to whatever you are doing. Editing your bio to the particular talk you're doing might be wise because maybe you're talking about a dry eye treatment, but your bio is a little more geared toward custom lenses or something like that. So having something a little more customized to what you're doing, I think is relevant and would be helpful, especially when you're younger in the circuit or younger in your, you know, population who is speaking or talking. So I think that's a great tip.
Totally.
Love that tip.
Do you want to know another tip?
Yes. Tell me.
Okay. Channel your inner diva.
Okay. I like this.
What that means is not only just like be ready to go there and take control of the show. Like, you know, it's a teamwork thing usually at most lectures with, you know, not just you, but a variety of people, but to really dictate and help to set the stage, like, you know, have conversations with the people you're working with ahead of time. To say, I'm going to pull you in for this part of the conversation. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I need this snack. Like, not like, bring me my snack. But like, if you're doing a dinner lecture, for example, yeah, it's like, I'll have a side of toast with like right. vegan butter on it and half of a mango or right. whatever. But also to like be decisive and kind of a diva about what your needs are. You don't want to be standing up somewhere passing out because you were too shy to like eat food before because you're the one giving the dinner lecture. So, you know, you say, I want my appetizer first. This is what time I want to do this. We're going to do it this way. So channel your inner diva. Just take control.
Have your plan. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's your plan. Let's just do it.
I like that. And then get there ahead of time so you can enact that plan, huh?
Totally.
Okay. What else? Tell me what else.
Always lessons. Always lessons. Well, I want to make sure, you know, actually something that came up that I was talking to Ariel Sorenzi about. So, and we have to get her on the show, Roya. Yes. Oh my gosh.
I love
Dude, this Ariel. Girl is overdue. I think she was on the show
a while
ago.
It's been a little while.
Ago.
It's time. She's definitely
Yeah,
overdue.
And it's definitely time. And it's so funny because one of the things that I wanted to chat with you about, because I feel like, I don't know if you're doing this or not, but is the use of virtual assistants. Because without giving away too much about what she may bring to us on the podcast, I was blown away because a lot of my kind of interest, not that I followed through on it, is learning about like AI scribing or like AI assistants and things like that. But what about virtual assistants? So I had no idea. I actually have a list of a few different examples of virtual scribes that people are using. And then funny enough, get this, I'm in San Francisco yesterday, having this like moment, learning that she's doing this at her practice. Literally, no person at the front desk gets an iPad with a receptionist who's virtual. Seriously. And it's fine. And it's going great. And I'm like, what? That's so interesting. And like, why not? And then I just came from dinner. And so then today I flew from San Fran to New York. So just across the country, whatever. Landed. Set up a time with you, snuck out for dinner with another colleague who's here and met another optometrist who, again, I think I'll give you his name later, but I want him on the show too. Same thing, talking about his virtual assistants. He has like 20 of them.
20?
And they both gave me the same name. And it's like, I don't even know how to say it. It's hello, Raish or Rachel or something like that. Put it in the chart notes.
Okay.
But it's really neat because it's, you know, the argument for it is there. So I think both of them were remote assistants that are from other countries.
Yes.
Some of the cool things about it is people are not distracted by the millions of things going on around them if they're in another location. So kind of like a call center. Why can't that call center be anywhere? You know?
It's true. Healthcare virtual assistant but they do everything. Solutions so, for medical, dental, optometry, and veterinary professionals.
Perfect. You just pulled it up. Yeah. Ariel uses the virtual assistant for literally everything. Like, I want to get a hold of this person, get me all their handles on social, everything, and get me their contact info done. You know what I mean? Like, you don't just put things out there in your to-do list and it's just done.
Wow.
And the price is just a little different too, because, you know, they are, and kind of, it's definitely a lower rate than what we would pay a person here in person in North America. But
it looks like it's $9.50 an hour. Weekly
That's
billing
exactly
every
is.
Monday, dedicated account manager, a flat mm-hmm. rate, no overtime fees, no contracts, cancel at any time, access to time tracking and monitoring. You can work with the same person every day.
Exactly. So it's like your person. Huh. And I've heard from both of my colleagues in the last 48 hours, like I said, two people back to back. So that's why I had to bring it up. It's like the universe putting it out here for us to open up the window on the podcast. But the feedback is that it sounds like, but I don't know, you know, I don't know much about it yet, is that this is chosen by a lot of people as like a little bit higher income than what they would make, say, for example, as a nurse or whatever, doing day to day with no flexibility. So somebody who has a family is enjoying the remote work.
Right.
And I can see that. You could do it from anywhere.
I mean, honestly, it's kind of brilliant if you think about it. I am a full believer in like offloading things that are not valuable to you and your time. Like if you can spend your time doing
totally.
More, and especially with our specialties and our mind, like you need time to rest and you need time to organize. And this is not something that your time should be, not something we should put your time into. So I am
100%.
All about this. I'm going to definitely look into something
100%.
Like this. Love this.
So you're going to use this in your own personal life, hey?
I mean, I might right now, maybe it's like a little less stressful, but honestly, it could be helpful.
For the office. Oh, sorry, personal and office.
Yeah.
I mean, I think
everything
it's cool.
Could be great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there's so much like mediocre things that you need to do, that you need to get done, that something like this could be amazing to help out. I'm saying
in fact, somebody who has like a special passion for some of the organizing too, that maybe you either don't have time for or maybe not even as good at, honestly.
Exactly. Well,
yeah.
Love this idea. Well, thank you for sharing this.
Yeah, no, it's a good little teaser. So let's get some of these guests on for future episodes.
Love it.
Well, we've definitely come to the end for today. We want to hear from you, so reach out to us with your feedback, questions, stories, things you're interested in hearing from us, either through our Instagram or Facebook. And we can't close today's show without saying thanks to Valley Contacts for both making great products and for being amazing people to work with. Be sure to tune in and listen to our next episodes, but until then, try not to blink.